Tonight, we're on concept 9, page C27, in the back of the 2021 through 2023 Red Service Manual, which reads, good service leaders, together with sound and appropriate methods of choosing them, are at all levels indispensable for our future functioning and safety. The primary world service leadership once exercised by the founders of AA must necessarily be assumed by the trustees of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. Billy, you'll have until 2 minutes to the top of the hour, and the time is now yours.
Thanks, Brooke. Good evening, everyone. Billy, alcoholic. Hopefully you have your service manual open. My page, it's in the concepts book 27. Concept 9 is super, super, super important. You could probably take 5 hours and really take a hard look at this, but I just want to reread a little bit of the actual concept. Good service leaders, together with sound and appropriate methods of choosing them, are indispensable. So how we select them and choose them is super, super important. The primary world service leadership, once exercised by the founders of AA, must necessarily be assumed by the trustees. So these methods of selecting them, if you have not studied the service manual, the front part, there's a lot of good information in there about how they're selected. Now, one of the challenges is it's very confusing because some of the details aren't there. Everything from the third legacy to the different types procedure to the different types of trustees, directors, and everybody else that we have. I'll give you a real life thing that happened Saturday regarding third legacy procedure. It's unbelievable to me that we need to put a note in the service manual. But I was at an assembly. It's funny because I was sitting by myself all the way in the back corner, left side of the room. And of course, people texted me and are like, we're really shocked you didn't come to our assembly. You're here for the weekend speaking tonight. So I had to write back and say, I am at your assembly. I'm just not sitting next to you because you would be talking to me and it would look like I'm the rudest guest in the world. So I'm sitting here by myself to prevent you from talking to me. However, there were elections that went on. And at one point, the person who was, they were on the third or the fourth, they were on the fourth ballot, actually. And for the fourth ballot, they said, you need 57.3 to win. And so I think at that time, somebody had gotten like 54 or 55 votes. And I went up to the person quietly, privately, and I just said, you know, you are not going to want to mention fractions anymore, because with that person getting 55 votes, there's a good chance on the next ballot, because the motion to go to the fifth ballot approved. I said, and based on what you just said, someone's going to get 57 votes, and then someone is going to say, you round down. Because it's 57.3 and not 57.5, 0.6, 0.7, 0.8, 0.9. So if I could do anything useful for this hour tonight, if you've not been through this before, when it comes to elections in two-thirds, we never round down. Because if 57.3 is two-thirds, 57 is not two-thirds. 57 would be less than two-thirds. And because even there's been lots of advances in technology, science, and medicine, we still do not divide people into 0.3s or 0.4s or 0.7s. Who knows? Who am I to say in 100 years that's not going to be possible? It possibly could. But that exact situation happened. Thank God he said on the fifth ballot, you need 57 to win, 58 to win, sorry. And what happened? Somebody did get 57 votes. And what happened? Somebody went up to the microphone and said, "You said it was 57.3. We round down." And then thank God it was explained. But in a lot of these situations, it's almost like when a speaker at a convention goes a little bit off the deep end. I'm sure we've all seen it. Just forgets, maybe gets all caught up in the moment, and maybe says something that's maybe not appropriate from the microphone and a convention. Lot of times, if you talk to those chair people who picked that speaker or chaired the meeting, they say, "We wrote them a letter 6 months ago." Well, I just want to let people know, writing a letter 6 months ago doesn't work. Alcoholics have the worst memories. Okay. You got to tell them that night, 5 minutes before they speak, "Hey, remember, you stick to alcoholism. We don't go off the deep end on outside issues. We, whatever your little instructions are. But we owe the fellowship the same for Third Legacy Procedure." The time to be looking at Third Legacy Procedure, if you're one of the people who are coordinating an election, is not 5 minutes before the meeting, something that complicated with the sliding scale that goes down and talks about fractions and 20% and one-fifth. Like, you have to be really prepared. Because I will tell you something that does happen, and it's very real. If you're not confident in how you relay the information to the people in that audience, they're not confident. If you come across like, "Oh, I just read this, a minute ago," like, you're going to have a war on your hands at the microphone. And even though we want to get right to the election, there's nothing better than walking somebody down that chart. And I would suggest, I've seen all kind of creative things now. I mean, 20 years ago, I would have told you, take that page out of the service manual, take it to, 20 years ago, I might have said Kinko's, but FedEx office, wherever you go for printing, and have that page blown up into a couple of poster size things. Have them put on cardboard backing and get easels. Or they even have this new fancy stuff that has pads that they can print on that has tape along the top of it, like a Post-it. And you can put them up on the wall. But since it's 2024, you could just have a QR code at the registration that says, "This is the Third Legacy Procedure," so that anybody, and you should have it on every table of people that are voting, and have them open it up and walk them through it. Because, we don't talk about it a lot, but I would say at least once or twice a year out of the 45 or so elections that go on, there's some bad feelings. There's some resentments. And they're all over the mishandling of elections. And I just want to stress that whether somebody wins the election, loses the election, even somebody who you think has no shot of winning the election, at the very least, they deserve a valid, fair process. I'm just talking about Third Legacy elections at assemblies that we owe people who are willing to put their name up. In fact, I would tell people more. Somebody who's only going to get two or three votes out of 40 or 60 or 80 votes, we owe that person even more. They're willing to put their name up on the board and hold their head high. So the Third Legacy Procedure is an important part of when we say appropriate methods of choosing them. In the first paragraph, it says, "No matter how careful you design our service structure of principles and relationships, no matter how well apportioned authority and responsibility, the operating results of our structure can be no better than the personal performance of those who must man it and make it work. Good leadership cannot function well in a poorly designed structure, but weak leadership can hardly function at all, even in the best of structures. But once we have created a sound structure, that job is finished, except for occasional refinements. We need to have a good structure." And I do want to talk about Hold on one second. I wanted to mention something. Oh, I want to give a little plug for Tradition 12 and the big misinformation that is out there about Tradition 12. Principles before personalities. It is not about me putting principles in front of your personality. It has nothing to do with anyone else's personality. It has to do with mine. It has to do with those traditions keeping me from bending the traditions. That's what that means. It goes on to say, with leadership, we shall have a continuous problem. Good leadership can be here today and gone tomorrow. Furnishing our structure with able and willing workers has to be a continuous activity. It is therefore a problem that in its very nature cannot be permanently solved. We must continually find the right people for our many service tasks. There's another word, right people, almost like the word the best. Like we need to find the right people, not someone to just fill a spot. Since our future effectiveness thus depend upon the ever new generation of leaders, it seems desirable that we now proceed to define what we consider a good service leader should be. That we carefully indicate in each level of service, especially in our board of trustees, what special skills will be required and what we review our present methods of finding and choosing that leadership. First, remember, and this is the most such an important critical part of this concept, the minute which it's the 1, 2, 3, fourth, third, 1, 2, 3, fourth paragraph. It does not go into talking about selecting trustees or the general manager or the chair of the board or even area delegates. It goes right into talking about GSRs. First, remember that the base for our service structure rests on the dedication and ability of several thousand general service representatives, several hundred area committee members, and nearly 100 delegates. These are the direct agents of the AA groups. These are the indispensable linkage between our fellowship and its world service. These are the primary representatives of AA's group conscience. Without their support and activity, we could not operate permanently at all. So we call it the bathroom rule. The bathroom rule is dumb. We don't elect people to be something because they happen to get up and go to the bathroom at the wrong time. And we laugh about it at certain times, but all it does is hurt our fellowship. It says, when making the choices of GSRs, the AA group should therefore have all the facts well in mind. It ought to be remembered that it's only the GSRs who, in group assembly meetings or in caucus, can name committee members and finally name the delegates. Hence, great care needs to be taken by the groups as they choose their representatives. And I think about that like great care. What does great care mean? More important than that, what does great care look like? Now, I'm going to make some assumptions. We know we elect GSRs every 2 years. So I'm going to call it, whether it's your November or your October or your December business meeting. Your GSR is finishing 2 years and you're electing the next GSR. The first thing you can do to show great care is to have that be the first position that is elected, not the last or third to last. It should be the number one position election you have at that business meeting. That's how critical and vital this position is. That's taking great care. Hit or miss methods should be avoided. Groups who name no GSR should be encouraged to do so. In this area, a degree of weakness tends to persist. The needed improvement seems to be a matter of increased care, responsibility, and education. If you elect your GSR after the monthly anniversary cake person, I'm just telling you, you're going to have difficulty. Okay? If you've already elected your chair and your treasurer and your secretary, and your greeters and cake person and whatever else. It appears to everyone else like you're electing something that's not important. It has to be at the top. Personal ambitions will have to be cast aside, feuds and controversy forgotten. Who are the best qualified people we can name? This should be the thought of it all. That one sentence. Who are the best qualified people? And this is hard for sometimes people to wrap their head around, especially in the world of service sponsorship that we live in. Everybody is in some lineage. Area delegate elections, area officer elections. I hope this is my wish of great care, that if someone mentions who their service sponsor is in their little 2-minute thing, you just don't vote for them, please. Please do not vote for anyone who names personally their service sponsor. It's who is the best qualified. And this is a big thing for principles before personalities. In other words, putting the traditions in front of your personality. There are plenty of times when the best person might not be your friend. They might not even be the person you agree with all the time. They might be someone you disagree with all the time. But, you know, I compare this to, like, I always use softball as an example. But you could use anything as an example. You could use school. You could use relationships. You could use work. We're a very interesting cross-section of society. You probably know this. We don't like to be judged on consistency. We like to be judged on excellence. That's what we prefer. See, if I'm really good in left field, and I'm going to catch a ball or two that someone else wouldn't catch, and even though I'm not a home run hitter, I will go 2 or 3 for 4 from the batter's box. See, I want you to forget that I don't show up for the next 2 softball games. Like, I just want you to judge me that when I do show up, I'm the best. And I just want to stress here that consistency just is better than excellence. People who actually show up and do their job. And you might have a friend or two who you know has flaky tendencies. You have to put your personal feelings aside. You have to elect the best people. And I go to talking about sound methods of choosing alternates. We hope that we have a good alternate who can take a position. We hope that. But it's not a guarantee. There's an election. But the one thing that is a guarantee in my life, in my service experience in AA, somebody who is a bad alternate coffee and cookie person is a horrible coffee and cookie person. They don't just magically become a good coffee and coffee person. If you have an alternate GSR who's not doing their job, why do you think they're going to do their job if they're a GSR? You have to really give it great thought. At the bottom of that page, it says, thus far, our third legacy method of naming delegates by a 2/3 vote or by lot has proved highly satisfactory. The system of choosing has greatly reduced political friction. It has made each delegate feel that he or she is truly a world servant rather than just the winner of a contest. In committee members and delegates alike, our third legacy methods have generally produced people of a high level of dedication and competence. In this area of service, we are in good shape. Our area assemblies need to continue to act with care and in selfless good spirit. It says here, on the next page, they say that the best man does not always win or the best woman. In answer, it must be pointed out that each time we have abandoned the two-thirds vote or a lot in naming delegates, there has been a sense of defeat and disturbance in the minority camp, which is now nearly offset by the advantage of naming the supposedly best man. Third legacy is not to, like, say that God chose you. It's just not. It's to say that you had enough votes to be second, that you could do the job, that you're that qualified, and that we respect the minority voice inside the room so much, we'll be happy with whatever name comes out of the hat. I have another thing I feel about this. There are plenty of people who feel different, but I'm just going to share it because it's what I was taught. If you're willing to stand for an alternate position, you should be willing to stand for that position. And I know that sounds like heresy to some people. It doesn't mean that you don't like the old alternate delegate who's standing for delegate. It doesn't mean that you're disrespecting them. It means that you're standing for an alternate position, which by definition means you are ready to move into at a moment's notice, maybe with 3 days' notice or less for the General Service Conference. That if you think you're that qualified, well, then you're qualified to stand for delegate. Now, I think one of the things we'll do after. I'll talk to Dee and Brooke, but one of the things, because it's so hard to talk about the ninth concept and then go into detail about certain elections, but I think we will have a week dedicated to the process of selecting Class A trustees, selecting the chair of the General Service Board, selecting regional trustees, selecting General Service trustees, selecting trustees at large, selecting non-trustee directors and selecting appointed committee members, because so many people don't understand that. But it's so detailed, it would take me 2 hours tonight to do it the right way. And one of the things that drives me crazy in service is we say, oh, we don't have that kind of time. We can't waste that time. But it's because we restrict ourselves to time so much. But that doesn't mean if we took the time, it would be a waste of time to explain it to everybody. So I have that on my wish list. The leadership essay in Concept 9 is one of the most important writings by Bill W. anywhere. I'm going to, you know, I could talk for 2 hours about this too, but I'll start here. There are four qualities of an AA leader that Bill spells out in this concept. Hopefully you've read it. The qualities are tolerance, flexibility, vision, and responsibility. Those are the four questions you have to ask about people you're electing into important positions for sure. Based on what Bill W. writes and based on what I have seen, the most important one but most difficult one is vision. Vision is for sure the number one quality of a leader. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about their area and the future, and I said, you know, you have to be like other nonprofits or even some profit companies, you know, like if you look down into their strategic planning, they might have a business plan for next year for 2025. They might have already finished it or they're working on it, but that's not their strategic plan. Their strategic plan is about 2030 or 2035. Like, where do we have to be? Even in AA, at the board level, at the Grapevine level, at the AAWS level, even at your area, the questions for your area isn't what do we want to do next year? You ever try to change something in AA in like 3 months? Yeah, it's not happening. If your area has been doing something a certain way for a long time, it's not going to happen. The only way to really make change is to have a long-term vision of the future. And to say, you know, we might not be able to change it next year or this year, but by 2030 or 2028, this is what we would like it to look like. And it also makes you think, because thinking today in 2024 that we need the same type of service structure that served alcoholics in 1965 or 1995 or 2010. We just know that's wrong. We have to have a service structure that works for today. But we can't think that the service structure that works today or how we do things is going to work in 5 or 10 years. Vision is so important. Tolerance is so important. Flexibility and tolerance together are super, super important. I'm going to read a couple of things, but I do want to give you a little, I call it a concept nine math equation. I learned it a long time ago, and it makes a lot of sense to me. And I share it wherever I can if you want to write it down, because I didn't make it up. But tolerance plus flexibility plus vision equals responsibility. Intolerance plus inflexibility plus lack of vision equals irresponsibility. It's a good little thing to keep written in concept nine. Now, there's a couple of things I want to point out, and I'll leave room for questions. But I don't want to forget to say this, so I'm going to say it right now, because for these anti-service manual people, for these people who are one legacy stuck and think that anything to do with service, I'm just going to tell you right now, the best description of recovery sponsorship in all of our literature is in concept nine. It's not in the sponsorship pamphlet. It's not in the big book where they don't even mention sponsors. It's not in any other pamphlet that talks about sponsors. It's not in any Grapevine article. It's the second to last paragraph of this concept where it says, this is true, particularly in the area of 12-step work, in which nearly all of us are actively engaged. Every sponsor is necessarily a leader. The stakes are about as high as they could be. A human life and usually the happiness of a whole family hang in the balance. What the sponsor does and says, how well he estimates the reaction of his prospects, how well he times and makes his presentation, how well he handles criticisms, and how well he leads his prospect on by personal spiritual example. These qualities of leadership can make all the difference, often the difference between life and death. No better description of sponsorship anywhere. Now, I'll go back for a little. Flexibility and tolerance. The one, two, three, fourth paragraph on 30 says another qualification for leadership is give and take, the ability to compromise cheerfully whenever a proper compromise can cause a situation to progress in what appears to be the right direction. Compromise comes hard to us all enough-and drunks. Nevertheless, we must never lose sight of the fact that progress is nearly always characterized by a series of improving compromises. We cannot, however, compromise always. Now and then, it is truly necessary to stick flat-footed to one's conviction about an issue until it's settled. These are situations for keen timing and careful discrimination as to which course to take. So, I just want to define a couple of words. When it says, Now and then, yeah. Now and then isn't like 5 out of 10. It's not 8 out of 10. Now and then is like 2 out of 100. Okay. Now and then is when you are unwilling to change how you feel about a particular situation. But it should not be your driving philosophy or strategy in AA service. It is super, super important to learn how to compromise. It is super and super important to learn what's not worth fighting over. You know, it's interesting when people send in proposed agenda items, sometimes people will send them to me and ask me to look at them. And most of the time, I have the same response to all of them. This is an agenda item, not a novel. Don't tell the trustees how to do their job. Don't tell them how to carry out what you want done. And don't have too many details. Now, you can do all those things, but what I'm going to tell you is going to happen is your agenda item's going nowhere. Because there will be too many things for alcoholics to have to compromise on or to argue on. You stick to the one sentence or two sentence question about your proposed agenda item. But give and take is super important. Now, it says about vision at the bottom of 30. Now we come to the all important attribute of vision. I think the ability to make good estimates both for the immediate and for the more distant future. Some might feel this sort of striving to be a sort of heresy, but we AAs are constantly telling ourselves one day at a time. But that valuable principle really refers to our mental and emotional lives. That means chiefly that we are foolishly to repine over the past, nor wishfully to daydream about the future. So, another important thing about Concept 9, not only is the greatest information about sponsorship there, but the definition of a day at a time, which has nothing to do with relapsing or drinking or anything else. We don't have some crappy program that only works for a day. That's big, big misinformation. Refers to our mental and emotional lives. That means chiefly that we are not repining or resenting. Like, yes, we all slip up emotionally, for sure, and mentally. I'll speak for myself. I slip up all the time. That's what it's talking about. It says, as individuals and as a fellowship, we shall surely suffer if we cast the whole job of planning for tomorrow onto a fatuous idea of providence. Providence with a capital P. God's real providence has endowed us human beings with a considerable capacity for foresight, and he evidently expects us to use it. Therefore, we must distinguish between wishful fantasy about a happy tomorrow and the present use of our powers of thoughtful estimate. This compels the difference between future progress and unforeseen woe. In today's world, we call those unintended consequences. But none of our literature says God takes care of AA. It's not an answer for a financial problem at your area or your district. God will take care of it. This line in the service manual describes more when it uses the words providence. God's real providence is that God takes care of us, and it's our job to take care of AA. Now, there are a couple of things in here, a couple of the most important things to me I wanted to save for the end. Is this whole we don't have leaders? Yes, we do. We do have leaders. In the leadership essay, the third paragraph says leadership, real leadership, of course, has to function in between these entirely imaginary poles of hope for excellence. In AA, certainly no leader is faceless, and neither is any leader perfect. Fortunately, our society is blessed with any amount of real leadership. The active people of today and the potential leaders of tomorrow, as new generations of able members swarm in, we have an abundance of men and women whose dedication, ability, Dedication, stability, vision, and special skills make them capable of dealing with every possible service assignment. We have only to seek these folks out and trust them to serve us. I love that line because this is what we're the worst at. We're worst at seeking these folks out. We're so afraid that someone's going to jump the line of succession in front of us, you know? We should be seeking people out in all corners of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially corners of people not involved in a group or general service yet. It goes down, skipping a paragraph. A leader in AA service is therefore a man or a woman who can personally put principles, plans, and policies into such dedicated and effective action that the rest of us want to back him and help him with his job. When a leader power drives us badly, we rebel. But when he too meekly becomes an order taker and he exercises no judgment of his own, well, then he isn't really a leader at all. And it always drives me crazy when people call me complaining about somebody. I'm like, did you vote for them? Yeah, I did. You knew who they were. There should be nothing surprising, right? What their good traits and their bad traits should not surprise you. But I love this one. Good leadership originates plans, policies, and ideas for the improvement of our fellowship and services. But the warning. But in new and important matters, it will nevertheless consult widely before taking decisions and actions. Good leadership will also remember that a fine plan or idea can come from anywhere, anybody. Consequently, good leadership will also discard its own cherished plans for others that are better, and it will give credit to the source. And how about this? Good leadership never passes the buck. Oh my God. That's principles before personalities. Once assured that it has or can obtain sufficient general backing, it freely takes decisions and put them into action forthwith, provided, of course, that such actions be within the framework of its defined authority and responsibility. I want to throw out a little suggestion. There's a lot of people here. Some are newer to service, some have been around a while. But I'm going to tell you, if you've been around your area, your district, or you're in a group a while, this is something that someone taught me that I have found useful. Sometimes, if you become so well known at your in a group or your area, when your name is attached to something, people read your name before they read your idea. Sometimes people will judge it on your personality rather on the validity of your idea. Most of us can probably admit that, you know, when we look at a list of motions on new business, we always look who submitted this crazy idea, right? We look at who submitted it, and then we're like, oh yeah, makes perfect sense. I'm definitely not in favor of it. I'm just telling you because a really good thing to do is maybe it doesn't need to have your name on it. Maybe you give it to someone else. Give it to a GSR or DCM or somebody submit. You know? I'm just telling you, human nature invades AA. It goes on to say a politico is an individual who is forever trying to get people what they want. A statesman is an individual who can carefully discriminate when and where not to do this. He recognizes that even large majorities, when badly disturbed or informed, can once in a while be dead wrong. When such an occasion arises and something very vital is at stake, it is always the duty of leadership, even when in a small minority, to take a stand against the strong storm, using every availability of authority and persuasion to effect the change. So, the bad news, if you're an AA leader, is a few of the warnings on page 30. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth paragraph. Leadership is often called upon to face heavy and sometimes long considered criticism. When I became a non-trustee director, a great man, friend of mine, mentor of mine, legend, hero of AA service of mine, to be perfectly honest. His name is Arnold R. He is a past general service trustee, a past AA Grapevine director from the Maryland area. He lives in the Baltimore section of Maryland. Used to. I think he still does. But he was one of my early icons in AA service, Arnold. I actually served with his wife as a delegate. But he was the first person who called me of people outside the circle who knew, like not the people who selected me as a non-trustee director. But he had heard from someone who was at Ford Weekend that I got selected as a non-trustee director, and he called me. I remember I was in my car, and he said, "Billy, you now get to go from critic to the criticized." And boy, was he right. 8 years of being super right. But that's what it says here. Called upon to face sometimes long and continued criticism. This is an acid test. There are always constructive critics or friends indeed. We ought never fail to give them a careful hearing. We should be willing to let them modify our opinions or change them completely. Often, too, we shall have to disagree with them and stand fast without losing their friendship. That's another warning. You should be able to stand on your position without losing friendships. We have to stop this thing in AA of anyone who asks a question is a troublemaker. It's just bad for AA. Now, if you are on the critic side, just do it in a way that's proper and polite, not attacking and biting and ugly. It goes on to say, even worse, there are those we like to call our destructive critics. They power drive. They are politickers. They make accusations. Wow, that's great news. This is what I have to look forward to. Maybe they are violent, malicious. They pitch gobs of gossip, rumors, and general scuttlebutt to gain their ends for the good of AA, of course. But in AA, we have at last learned that these folks, who may be a trifle sicker than the rest of us, need not be really destructive at all, depending very much on how we relate ourselves to them. And then it gives some really good advice. To begin with, we ought to listen carefully. Not listen, listen carefully to what they say. Sometimes they're telling the whole truth. At other times, a little truth. More often, though, they are just rationalizing themselves into nonsense. Here's what I learned. It took me a long time. Grateful that as a general service trustee, you usually have a couple of years as a non-trustee director. I had four of going to regional forums and area assemblies, and people always have something to say. People always disagree with the board. But what I learned is when someone asks me a question, I need to follow the instructions in the big book, which is pause. If you're an AA leader giving reports, the best thing you can do when you go to a podium is on the top of your report that you're reading from, in big red letters, write pause. And if it's two or three pages, write pause on every page. So when you turn the page, it's still there. What I have found useful about that pause is an acknowledgement. And call it from my worst critic in the world. My pause is to recognize in a second or two inside my brain that this person loves AA as much as I do. And that's why they're asking this question. That's why they might seem a little upset. It is not because they want to embarrass me. They do not want to humiliate me. They're not just trying to be argumentative. If I want to give myself that latitude and expect you to accept what I have to say, not that it's just what I want, it's because I love AA, then I have to give that same latitude to people who ask hard questions. It's a long, long learning process to be a leader. Mean, I feel like I have had the best business career in the world because I got sober young and served in a lot of these positions young. I feel like any criticism that even my boss or my board have for me at work is nothing compared to, like, you know, I often say to people who are involved in AA service, like, I used to work for this one boss, and every once in a while he would call me in and he would say, "You know, Billy, I need you to go to this office. I don't know what the hell they're thinking there. I don't know what's going on there. But could you find out for me what's going on there? And maybe, like, rein it in a little bit." Like, I would get assignments like that from time to time. And the funny thing about those assignments is a lot of times I would leave there and I would be like, you know, that was not as bad as the October 1999 assembly. You know, that was not as bad as the state convention committee meeting of 2004. You know, like, I really feel like in my business career, and I serve on other nonprofit boards and I chair a very large nonprofit board, I feel like AA gave me so many learning lessons and skills. But I'm not afraid to suggest non-AA resources. If you go to the Robert Greenleaf Foundation, there is a book about servant leadership, a pamphlet. I would get it. The whole trick is to be a servant leader, not a power driver. The whole trick is to be able to, yes, we have third legacy procedure. Yes, we use two-thirds voting, all this other stuff. But at the end of the day, like the AA group pamphlet says about informed group conscience, that should be at the end. A good leader should be able to get things so the vote is really not even consequential anymore. Servant leadership talks all about building by consensus. There are other really good leadership books out there. Leaders Eat Last. There's a really good one about emotional intelligence, but there's some really good leadership books out there. And you should take advantage of them. I know that I have, and I've had to check myself and say, wow, that's a really good idea. And it's opposite than what I think, but I'm going to try it. And a lot of times, you know, those are some really, really good suggestions. So I'm going to go to questions. I have a question here. Is it good leadership when people won't rotate out or think there's nobody else to do the job? Or people that have stood for DCM or any other position in district for more than one term? Any concepts or traditions speak to this to help with election process coming up? Yes. Tradition 9, rotation. Talks all about rotating leadership is best. AA does not depend on any individual. Any organization, if it depends on one individual, it's a failing structure you're built on. Somebody just sent me a message. They voted to anamnetize or you know, they make their agenda items autonomous. I think that's good, except for when you have to let the person speak, then it's not. But I think it's good, you know, that in writing, maybe it doesn't say who submitted it, just the person who sent it is saying it anonymously. That sounds like a good idea to me in writing in the minutes. Any other questions about Concept 9? Or if there are any questions from the preceding concepts that you now are just thinking about that you want to ask now, we can gladly go over them. I'll give a couple of minutes. Do you have any examples of when a vision went bad? That's a really good question. The first time we launched electronic books in 2009, it went as horrible as could possibly be. It went worse than anyone could have predicted the worst would have been, actually. But they violated the rule. They didn't consult widely. They just decided at the AAWS board level and then told the conference, we're doing this in 2 months. Yeah, 4 months later, we pulled down the big book off of Kindle. Went really, really bad. That consulting widely is a really, really important thing. I also think that if we really embrace Bill W's words of the introduction of the concepts, if we really embrace vision, we should be able to accept that something doesn't work out. Like, that could be just as good news as it working out. Like, we tried it and it didn't work. So we try something else. But the only time I know that vision has failed, I'm talking at the board level, is not consulting widely. The Kindle, the manuscript, not consulting widely. People talk about, God knows everyone's talking about the plain language big book. And, I read it this weekend. On my iPad traveling. But whether you like that book or don't like it, fact of the matter is we've been talking about it for years, years. It's been on the conference agenda for years. I think the removing of the singleness of purpose language in the treatment committee workbook that was not consulted widely is probably going to cause more of a problem in the coming year than the plain language big book, to be perfectly honest. If you read the conference report, it says the conference committee approved minor editorial changes to the treatment committee workbook. Now, I don't know. I served on that board for 8 years. I think I am pretty in tune with what minor editorial changes means. It does not mean wholesale removal of two paragraphs. That is not a minor editorial change. That is a wholesale change to literature. But I think it's interesting. It wasn't widely consulted. I think we'll be hearing a lot about it over the next year or two. But the person who asked the question, it's a great question. It's what they all have in common is not widely consulting. If you look at the plan, I hate to pick on the board, but the Kindle, the manuscript, and then the plan to restructure our leadership in 2015 or 16, that completely failed. The trustees just put it forward as an agenda item. It was not, I don't say in the corporate world, in the world of organizations that I operate in all the time, there's a word that we use today that we've given one word to widely consulting. We say, has an idea been socialized? That's the current kind of organizational leadership description. Has something been socialized? Meaning, have we thrown it out to a lot of people? Have we let people chew on it for a while? Have we let people think about it for a while? Have we taken a lot of feedback on it? All the things I can think about that the board has gotten, and I'm sure if I looked into your area, if you had a problem where vision went bad, it was probably where something wasn't socialized. They did not consult widely. That is the one thing where vision has blown up that they all have in common. Okay. I believe I have found an interesting local phenomenon in which AA leadership seems to be populated with alcoholics that have never detoxed from alcohol. Regarding sound and appropriate methods for choosing the next round of leaders, I'm worried about continuing the local trend of electing people who misrepresent their alcoholism and have no interest in putting drinkers first. Is there a way we can better screen candidates that they're able to place AA's 12 traditions before their own personal self-interest? I would just ask, I'm not going to name the person who asked this question. When you say drinkers, or you say populated with alcoholics in quotes, are you saying there are people who suffer from other problems and alcoholism is not one of them? Is that what you're saying, but yet they're active in AA service? I'll ask if you can send me an answer to that question. When you do, I'm going to, if I think you're asking what I ask, I'm going to give you something to take a look at. The person who asked that question, am I right? Is that what you're saying? You think people who are not suffer from other problems have become leaders in your AA service structure? I'll give you a second to say yes or no. Leaders Eat Last was one of them. Somebody asked me about the book. Yes. The Servant Leadership from the Greenleaf Foundation is a pamphlet, a little booklet. It's excellent. Okay, I got like 2 minutes. So the person who asked a question about this local phenomenon, are you still here? And are you talking about people not suffering from alcoholism serving as leaders in AA? Sometimes many are dual, however, when referenced fifth tradition literature. Okay. We don't care if people are dual. We don't care what other problems you have, as long as one of them is alcoholism. Now, we don't redefine alcoholism. Okay. There's no such thing as a powder form of alcohol. Let's just get that straight when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a powder form of drugs. I tell people to go to the definition. If you're standing for any AA service position that requires you to be an alcoholic, you should meet the membership requirements to be a Class B trustee. And in the bylaws of the General Service Board, they spell it out carefully. Page 132, if you're curious, of the service manual. It says, there shall be 14 Class B trustees. These Class B trustees are designated as ex-alcoholic only because in common speech of man, an ex-alcoholic is an individual. Now listen to this. An individual who at one time imbibed alcoholic beverages excessively and uncontrollably, but who does not now imbibe at all. Call me a liar, but look up the word imbibed in the dictionary. That means you imbibed it. You did not snort it. You did not smoke it. You did not even shoot it. You imbibed it. You drank it. And it says, imbibed alcoholic beverages. Beverages. You drink beverages excessively and uncontrollably. That is the requirement to be a Class B trustee. So that's it. Thanks, everybody. See you next week. Thanks, Brooke.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.